please join the conversation. I want this space to be a place where people can talk to each other and form a digital community. A group of diverse people whom we can share ideas and visions of how we can come to tackle some of the great issues of the day. If change is going to happen, it's going to come from us and not those who are benefiting from the status quo. I want the space to be a truly democratic place where we can talk about a better future and we can envision and act upon it. It can come in the form of interviews, political commentary, public announcements, call-outs. It can be whatever we want. So if you are involved in important community work, have a great idea, just get in touch with me at stuartrichardson.ca and we can arrange to have a chat and get this out to the world and join the conversation.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Dr. Maria Paez. She's a sociologist. We appreciate your taking our call this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling me.
Can we talk a little bit about the political myth that abound today and that perhaps informs so much of the way we understand ourselves and our world?
Awareness is the first issue. And to have awareness, you have to question, why are we like this? Why do we think this way? How did these thoughts come into our heads? All these kind of things. And this is scary for some people. You don't want to rethink, because one of the things that myths and traditions and customs and rules and laws do is that they push you down a road and you don't have to worry where you're going because you've got your map. So you don't have to think, is this the right way to go? I've got my map. It says turn left here, turn right, go straight. And so these rules, these traditions, these myths, even these laws are the ones that tell us where we should go down. But it comes a point where you have to stop on the road and say, is this direction I want to go? Is this map correct? Have there been any changes that this map isn't really reflecting? So this is the moment where you try to have a self-awareness. Now, this self-awareness is not just anything. This is the fundamental issue of a human society. Socrates said it. Socrates said it how many millennia ago? He said, the unexamined life is not worth living. If you are walking through life like a zombie, it's not worth living. You have to examine your life, and you examine the ones around you, not because you're going to reject them, but perhaps you'll reject something, perhaps you'll accept others, perhaps you'll make it better. But we can never make anything better unless we look at it critically. Now, this is all very well, what I'm talking about, theoretically, but it comes down to something very, very practical. We have elections all over the place. It comes down to politics. Why? Because politics is the widest map. It is the map that tells us as a society what direction we're going to go. Whether you like politics or politicians or not, whatever, you can't escape it. And unfortunately, in Canada, we have a system that doesn't encourage the participation of people in it. It's called representative democracy. I'm not against it entirely. I understand what it means. It means you choose certain people who will then make those big decisions for you. They will tell you, okay, we're going to use this map. We're going to go east. We're going to go west. We're going to go south. Okay, that's okay. But we're all fallible and we're all human and nobody really has all the answers to everything. That is why an element of participation is really important. An element of those representatives to go back to the people they represent and find out what they think, what's going on, what their lives are about, because if not, you're going to have, sort of robots taking your decisions. So we have come to this point now in Canada where there are big decisions to be made for Canada as a country because there's so many changes going on in the world. You see the rise of fascism everywhere. And I'm not saying fascism is an insult. You see the government of Ukraine, real, not even neo-Nazis, actual Nazis were governing. And NATO and all the allies of Canada and the United States and Europe quite happy and allowing this. We see a fascist, a total fascist in Brazil. and everybody fawning over this man who says, you know, that homosexuals should be killed, you know. This is a man who has told their police, you shoot first, you know, and ask questions later, you know, shoot the criminals. I mean, this is a man with no regard for his own laws. And yet these are great buddies of the big fascists in the White House. Trump has brought the world to a crossroads. Because he's the president of the United States, all kinds of people fawn over him, and this is the United States, very important, we have to listen, all these. But the man who's sitting there is espousing very dangerous ideas. Just last week, he said we got to get rid of the judges. This, he said this at the border with Mexico, when they were told no, people have the right to come to the border to ask for asylum, and then they go before a judge who will decide. And what was his answer? We have too many judges. We have to get rid of these judges. Well, Shakespeare said it when he said first we kill all the lawyers, right? Well, this is Trump saying we have to get rid of the lawyers. We have to get rid of the law, basically. But the important point is that people are allowing this, that people are emboldening these people and accepting it. And in Canada, we're a bit protected from many of these things. We're far away from them, and we have our lives. We have a huge country. Our provincial governments are more important than the things that are happening in the world. But the world is coming to us. And furthermore, we now have a government, a liberal government. This is unbelievable. We have a liberal government in Ottawa who is emboldening, who is backing, who is partner, absolute partner, with the fascist, imperialist adventures of Trump in Latin America. Here is Canada trying to overthrow a government in our hemisphere. And Canadians don't know anything about this. Or if they do, they put a blind eye and they're listening to these incredible ideas of this unspeakable woman, Freeland, who has taken Canada down this wrong road. Now, why do I say all of this? Because we have to figure out what kind of neighbor does Canada want to be to the hemisphere. Is it only the United States that's worthwhile for us? Is foreign policy in Canada only whatever the United States is doing, and we back them? This is very important because it hasn't been this way. This is Canada of Lester B. Pearson, Canada of Pierre Elliott Trudeau. This is Canada of even Diefenbaker. This is Canada of Jean Chrétien, who didn't think that. So it. We now have a moment where Canada is going to have to make a big decision. It's actually made this decision in terms right now, like a snapshot. Canada is Tweedledum, Tweedledee to the United States. Mm-hmm. But Canadians perhaps don't realize this, and they'll have to think about this. What kind of country is Canada? How is it that Canada feels so strongly towards the United States, so strongly towards Europe, England or France, whatever it might be, and doesn't feel so strongly about its own indigenous people, for example, which is all this earth, of our land. These are the people, the original peoples here. How come Canada doesn't feel, in its myth, more united to the rest of the continent? The myth of England and France and the United States exclude us from the other myths of solidarity, the other myths of community, the other myths of other peoples who are also part of Canada, whether you like it or not.
And I want to talk a little bit about their story, because the story of what Venezuelans have tried to do over the last 20 years is a story that makes us reconsider, has capitalism really served us? Is capitalism really the only way we want to go?
It all started in 1999 when Chavez became was elected, and from the moment in which the United States realized This was a government that wasn't just going to say yes to them. This was a government that was not going to kneel before them. From that moment on, there was this animosity and now war against Venezuela. And the main reason is because Venezuela questioned that model, questioned the neoliberal capitalist model, and said, no, look at the poverty, look at the misery, look at what 60, 70 years of selling petroleum at the international market, look at the despair that it has brought the people of Venezuela. 80% of the people of Venezuela were poor in 1999. A third of the people were in dire poverty and in malnutrition, state of malnutrition. This is a country that sold the petroleum for the two world wars, for the development of Europe, for the development of the North. Huh? And yet it got pittance and it was robbed. They say that the equivalent of 15 Marshall Plans disappeared in the pockets of the elite that today goes against Maduro in the last 40 years. So this is the reason that the United States declared Venezuela an unusual, extraordinary enemy, risk to them. It is, of course, because Venezuela has petroleum, but they've always had the petroleum. What was Venezuela going to do with the petroleum? Eat it? In 1999, about 90% of Venezuela's oil was going to the United States. It was being sold to them. Venezuela never said, we're not going to sell you petroleum. So although, yes, it's the greed, they want to take hold of the petroleum, but it's also this, how dare these little brown people think they're not going to listen to us? How dare they not, just follow whatever we tell them? And it was this lack of respect towards the imperial, I would say, heirs of the United States and their allies that has gotten Venezuela to where it is now, and Cuba. 60 years of Cuba also saying, we are a free nation, we are a sovereign nation, and we won't kneel before you, and this is what Venezuela is doing. And the whole business of the economic crisis and the pseudo-humanist crisis and all of this, they always say, well, this is the failure of the socialist policies, and it's none of that. Venezuela has never really been socialist, has never been allowed practically to govern, because what it is that it has been an economic, political, media, and cultural war against Venezuela since President Chavez was elected, and now Maduro. They vilified Chavez, now they vilified Maduro, whichever way, even his mustache is somehow suspect. So this is a clash, yes, of myths. This is a clash of ideas. This is a clash of, where do we go? Is this map correct? Do we go north? Do we go south? Do we go east or we go west? And Venezuela, a sovereign nation, a nation that liberated itself and five other countries from the terrible chains of the Spanish Empire, says, no, we're not going to go in that direction. We want our own direction. We want to make our own mistakes. We want to make our own destiny. We are not going to follow the neoliberal capitalist model that has devastated, that has brought only misery to our country. We're going to try something else. And the United States is saying, well, you can't. You have to follow what we want. No. You have to do what we say. The shame of Canada will forever have this shame, that Canada, one of the nations that created the United Nations, has followed a madman, has followed this madman in the White House, in a vile, amoral war against a smaller and more vulnerable country. And that stain will be very hard to erase unless there are some very, very different policies that occur in Ottawa.
But the really powerful story, I think, is that we as a people are not just accepting this story to be the one that will define us for years to come. And that, I think, is really exciting. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the significance of the Bolivarian Revolution for us as a people, for us as our story develops, because there's a story that says poverty is inevitable, you know, injustice is inevitable, war is the way of the day. You know, we're just being culturized and socialized into believing that war is just, you know, a natural process of democracy. And to me, that sounds crazy.
We should listen to the moral leaders of the world, to the Pope, to the Dalai Lama, to people like them who say, no, war is immoral. And these sanctions, these war with another name in which you're trying to make a whole country be hungry, not be able to get food, not be able to get the medicines that they need, so that then they are so disgusted that they will turn against their own government instead of the governments that brought this about. That is war, and that is immoral, and that is against the UN Charter. It's Article 2nd that says no threat or use of force should be used against any country. There should be non-intervention, non-interference in the domestic affairs of other countries. The International Criminal Court, Article 7 of the Rome Statute, says the sanctions are a crime against humanity. Canada today is carrying out a crime against humanity, and one day I'm going to see Chrystia Freeland sitting on on that criminal court for the sanctions that she's brought about against Venezuela. The OAS Charter, the poor OAS has been absolutely destroyed lately by what's happened. It's Chapter 4 also says the same thing. All these sanctions are illegal, they're immoral, they directly hurt the population. You know what happened? Let's talk about what you're saying, how people react to things. On March the 7th, all the electricity in Venezuela, everywhere, in every section of the country, went out. For 7 days, Venezuela was in darkness. Without electricity, water couldn't be pumped. People in high-rises couldn't get water because the water has to be pumped up. So they had no water, they had no electricity. They tell me, because of course I was in contact all the time with Venezuela, that the uncertainty was terrible. All of a sudden, there's no light, there's no TV, there's no radio, there's nothing, nobody knows what's happening. And on top of that, everybody expecting the Marines to arrive. They didn't know whether this was the beginning of the invasion of the United States. People finally were able to listen to the radio by going into their cars, turning on their cars and watching the radio, and then the government radio station was on and telling them what was happening and what to do and all this. Well, they thought that this would break the back of the Bolivarian Revolution. This was the United States and its allies bringing a country to its knees, and they thought, right, they're going to go against Maduro, and they're going to be furious, and they're going to change the government, and we're going to have our friend there ruling Venezuela. Exactly the opposite happened. I was so thrilled and absolutely moved by the things that Venezuelans were saying. People in the poor areas calling up the radio station saying, "We're here listening to you on our car, and my son managed to help others, and we are having a communal food here." Another person in a high rise. So, well, the high rises, like it was Sunday, everybody going into everyone's house, we're all cooking together, we're all helping each other. Another person calling up saying, "We've learned how to make candles, these lights with oil, and we're all making little wicks so that everybody has oil lamps." One after the other, people calling in and people sending messages to Maduro. "Maduro, they're doing this to us because they want to get you out. Don't you give up. This is a war against us. They're not going to bring us down." And this was just over and over and over again, people calling up that radio and telling them that they weren't going to be bowed. And it reminded me of the stories that I heard from my family about the Blitz in England. Although it's a different thing, but there are similarities. Hitler bombed London, and he thought that by bombing London, he would bring the English to their knees. They'd be so frightened, they'd make a deal with him, and he would be able to conquer England. Well, of course, the opposite happened. The British said, screw you, we're never going to give up. We're going to fight on the beaches, or we're going to fight in the fields, or we're going to fight everywhere, but we won't give up. Well, that very same Churchillian attitude the Venezuelans had on March 7th when the lights went out for 5 days. 5 days. These are 5 days where, you know, factories couldn't produce anything. The stuff in your fridge, you know, went bad. This is a tropical country where it's very hot. This is the type of resilience that the United States doesn't understand, that Canada doesn't understand, that Europe doesn't understand, that strength that comes from their history. Venezuelans, in their most dire moments, always had a blazing light. They always had this wonderful thing they could go back to, and that was Simon Bolivar and the patriotic army that slew the Spanish Empire that had governed most of the continent. And all those glorious battles, those great sacrifices that so many Venezuelans and indigenous peoples, and they all did in order to be free. And they said, we fought one empire to be free. We are still free. We are still sovereign. We won't give up. That is something that they don't understand, this resiliency. Why hasn't Maduro fallen? Any other country with one day without electricity might have fallen. With one-eighth of the things that they've done to their currency and with all of these sanctions, they would have brought down. And I go back to that power of the myth. This it's not a myth in the sense that it's not true. It was true. It's the historic circumstances of the 1800s, which is still there, living history for them. And this is where they get their strength. Now, I go back to Canada's role. Where are we going to get our strength? Where are we going to have our strength? And we have pygmies for leaders. We have pygmies for politicians. We have a pygmy here in Ontario who doesn't believe in climate change, who has done everything to take down any kind of, you know, even small measure of policies that Ontario had in order to mitigate global warming. And that's why I come back to Canada and I say, Canadians have got to wake up. Canadians have to be more critical. Canadians have to think broader and wider and deeper and not be so complacent and so passive. And I hate this business of, oh, the politics, I want nothing to do with politics. See, it means you want just to live your own little life, okay? Your own little life and your own little privileges, and you don't care about the people next door. That's not true. I know Canadians don't feel that way. But we have to make that even broader. I tell you this because I saw the incredible opening that of their hearts and homes to Syrian refugees that Canada did. This was extraordinary. You see in their hearts, Canadians are wonderful people who do want to have community and solidarity and stretch out their hand to the others. And what is impeding us is this terrible individualism, this terrible greed that is capitalism. Capitalism that breeds that kind of, oh, listen, just take yourself back, you know. That's the most important thing. You make your money and forget about everything else. We've got to fight that attitude. Yeah.
In closing, what would you like to say to Canadians? Because many people don't realize that April 13th marked the anniversary of the coup against Hugo Chavez. So the fact that this aggression is undergoing is almost prophetic, but as you point out, I wanted to end on a high note and remember that the Bolivarian people, the people of Venezuela, are strong regardless of the attacks that have been launched around them. They seem to be standing strong. So what would you like us to remember, and as we move forward, as we unite in solidarity with Venezuelans?
I would like Canadians to remember that solid cooperation and solidarity that they had to build this nation. You could not survive in this really harsh climate that Canada has, this harshness of the winter, this harshness of the summer. This would be a land unpopulated if it hadn't been because neighbors and friends and even people who didn't know each other would help each other out as they built this country. So now I ask Canada, be a good neighbor. Understand that you are part of this hemisphere and that these countries south of the Rio Grande, they are human beings like you. They are probably even have your same blood because of the indigenous peoples and of the black peoples that are here and of the Europeans also. So be a good neighbor. So they say that Venezuela had bad policies, that Venezuela has a terrible economy. So is that a reason to bring down the government? Isn't that a reason to go down there and help? So you see someone who is sick and you kick them? Ah, I kick you because you're sick and you're stupid enough to get sick. If it is true that you believe that these were wrong policies, then all the more reason why Canada should be saying, let us help you. Let us be on your side. Not, we'll help you if you get rid of this government that we don't like, because this is a government that's gone against our corporate interests. This is a government who doesn't want our gold miners down there. This is a government who doesn't want our mining industry down there. This is, and what they don't want is Canadian corporations to go down there and devastate them, as they have been doing under this sheer capitalism that we have. So I say to Canadians, this is not you. This is not the country that created the United Nations. This is not the Canadian tradition to carry out illegal, immoral sanctions against a more vulnerable, smaller, poorer country than Canada. This is the moment to give out your hand and say, Venezuela, we are with you. Whatever government you want to decide, we will be with you. And we will help you to have a better life. So, and this cannot happen unless people wake up and find out what the hell the minister and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is doing. This is a clouded, shrouded in darkness ministry that has no public participation, no public consultation. This Minister Freeland takes decisions as she feels fit, without any consultation. Has she consulted the Latin Americans here in Canada over what she's doing? No, she hasn't, because they're all against what she's doing. Canadians have to take charge of their public policies, of their international policies. They can't just say, oh, well, you know, I got this tax and I got this, policy, you know, that will help this and subsidize that. No, figure out what Canada is doing internationally and go there and talk to your MPs and tell them, this is irresponsible. This is not Canada. This is not being a good neighbor. This is going against our most treasured the myths of who we are. We are the nation that helped create the United Nations, a place of peace. These policies are policies of war, and we must stand against that.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Dr. Maria Paez. She's a sociologist. We appreciate your taking our call this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling me and asking me. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Join the Conversation at stuartrichardson.ca. Please feel free to get in touch with me at stuartrichardson.ca to hear previous shows and to submit your ideas and wonderful community work that you're participating in. And let's get together and join the conversation.